Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Good evening to you. Welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media, but you already know that it is a Tuesday. That means it is a Technology and Innovations Tuesday. Today, we're talking about a very interesting topic and one that I think is going to blow your mind, but be ready to learn because I'm looking forward to learning. If you're wondering what we're talking about sensory science in food technology. Now, let me give you a moment to just let that sort of sink in. Sensory science in food technology, right? And this is a multidisciplinary field that uses the senses to measure, interpret, and understand human responses to food and beverages. And it's a one that continues to grow and adapt alongside swiftly changing consumer preferences and, of course, the social, technological, and environmental challenges shaping the future of food. So where is the field headed to next? And what can the younger generation of sensory scientists, it's a career, some of us didn't even know that, right? So those who will inherit these challenges, what can they learn from their mentors in the field? And one of them is Dr. Daniso Beswa, who is a senior lecturer looking at food technology at the University of Johannesburg. And I'm really so blessed to have this conversation with the good doctor this evening. And he's joining us to help us understand just a little bit about sensory science and where the future of food is looking at. And is joining us. Good evening, Doc. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. How are you doing? How's the year so far? Did it start well for you?
Yes, so far it's promising. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in the near future, but at least I am positive.
You are positive, right? That's really fantastic. Did you take some time out, Doc, in December?
Yes, I did take some time just to relax and rest and have time with my family.
Yeah. And I'm sure as lecturers, you really don't get time to yourself. There's research, there's this and that and that, and it's you need to keep up with everything.
Yeah, the most challenging part is that our work doesn't end at 5 o'clock. It's always our offices, our offices and our, what call them, our bags.
Yes.
Anytime, even sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night, the first thing that knocks your mind is the pending work from pending activities from work, and then you see then from there you cannot sleep again.
Yeesh, Doc, and I'm sure it's because it's something that you love, you wake up in the middle of the night, it doesn't really break your back, right?
No, not at all. When you wake up in the middle of the night, you find yourself sneaking into your corner where you usually do work, and then while everyone is sleeping, then try to get ready for the day.
I see. But I'm happy that you took some time out, Doc, and spent time with family as well. The year 2024, maybe if you can start there, Doc, how do you summarize it, particularly from this particular field and as someone who does research in this space?
Year 2024 has been one of the most challenging years.
Okay.
So I understand the term. One of the most challenges that people have when it comes to research in the field of food science and technology is also the issues of funding. You know, the funding are not as accessible as they used to be before. And then due to certain challenges that have developed over the years, including the issues of COVID and all that.
Yeah.
So people have been operating their research activities within limited budgets. Even though they had to go through such challenges, at the end of the day, they had to actually achieve certain goals, which is something that we can actually celebrate.
Okay. And Doc, just to go back a little bit here, is this something that you wanted to do from a young age? Like when you go back to where you were born, did you want to be in this field?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know about this field. I grew up in a village somewhere in the Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
But I accidentally came across it when I was one of the evenings I was reading some documents from CPUT.
Yeah.
The former Peninsula Technical. And then as I was going through, I found this kind of course that was interesting.
Yeah.
And the fact that at that time they were saying that there was a demand of more than 1.6 million food technologies. Then I said, this is the course.
This is the course, right?
I tried. Yes. Then I applied for it. And unfortunately, I got admitted.
Yeah. Did you think you'd become a lecturer as well in it?
No. The issue of being a lecturer never actually knocked my mind. I envisioned myself working in the food industry.
Yeah.
So this is where I started immediately after my graduation.
Ah.
But unfortunately, there I realized that it was not a good space for me. Then I left and then ventured into the academic space.
Into the academic space. And it sounds like you are enjoying this space.
Yes, this is my space.
This is your space. I love that, Doc.
Yes.
I really love
this
that.
This is
your space, right? And yes. that's really amazing. Thank you, Doc. When I started here, I spoke about almost like growing and rapidly adapting consumer preferences. I want us to start there, Doc, before we get into the technicalities of this topic. The preferences, and I'm asking because for me, from where I come from, right, we perhaps don't have the, I suppose, the depth at which you are at the coal face of consumer preferences changing, particularly in the food space. We do the analysis, and I'm an economist, right? So I look at consumer preferences and all that, and I try and find some nice numbers and finance and blend the two worlds together. But you are talking about it from a very, very in-depth, I suppose. Are people really changing their preferences as fast as we make it out to be?
Yes, people do because of this ever-changing lifestyle.
Yeah.
And trends.
Yeah.
They want to align. For instance, there's some people that are more health conscious.
Yeah.
They prefer more food that will actually give them not only the nutrients, but also provide some health-related benefits. So that is why we find that some consumers, when it comes to buying at the point of purchase, they go through the product. They read to see the list of ingredients that are listed there.
Yeah.
And some actually that might actually have a negative impact on their health, things like allergens.
Yeah.
You understand?
So
there is that, kind of a change.
Yeah.
Which is actually, it keeps on changing.
Yeah.
So as people, lifestyles change.
Yeah. Would you say it's economic as well? In other words, as people get into work and they get better jobs, especially the young people who are now middle class at very young age and all that, a person, because of access to education that perhaps, older people didn't have because of the previous system and all that, which is a topic on its own. But do you find that now that young people are getting into work, really good jobs, they are getting great money, they are preferring to live a much more healthier life. And so their choices at food, like you said, when they're buying, they're choosing maybe healthier food.
Yeah, I think their buying power also have an effect.
Yeah.
Because you can't, if you are earning less, you can't be going for these luxurious food because they are quite pricey.
Yes.
You understand?
Yeah.
So you always go for the things that you can easily afford. You don't even look much into these benefits. You don't even know what a benefit is.
Yes.
Sometimes, even if you know, you don't care that time because the affordability doesn't allow you. You understand?
Yeah.
So that actually has an effect.
That has an effect.
So now that people are at a young age, are able to earn some reasonable salaries.
Yeah.
So now that actually kind of channel their topping behaviors.
Yes. Oh, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. Doc, now we must speak a little bit more because I love these kind of topics a little bit. Okay, let's then define then this sensory science, right? And what are we talking about here? Please paint a picture for us, Doc.
So when we talk about sensory science, we're talking about a branch of food science.
Okay. Okay.
It is a branch of food science, and food science is a multidisciplinary program.
Yes.
You know, it includes the engineering, then you find the chemistry, the law. There are so many, even food technology is part of that.
Okay.
So sensory science applies multidisciplinary approach. So because in this multidisciplinary approach, it applies the physiology science.
Okay.
So when we talk about physiology science, we talk about a science where we use human senses, you know, to evaluate the food product. And those senses that we use there is a sense of sight, which means now the eyes, you see the product. Right? How does the product appeal to you as a consumer?
Okay.
The appearance of the product.
Okay.
And then another sense is the sense of touch. How does it feel when you touch it? And then the sense of smell. Is the smell desirable? Do you desire that smell? And then the sense of hearing. So and then a sound. When you, for instance, you enjoying your Lay's chips.
Yeah.
So as you enjoy them, that sound as you crush them with your teeth.
Oh my goodness.
You enjoy that. You understand?
Oh my goodness.
So and you know already your memory, your brain has already memorized that sound. But if ever by any chance you are sinking your teeth in these Lay's chips and then you don't hear that sound, you'll be like amazed. What's happening now? What's happening? You can even just take it out of your mouth and spit it out immediately because it's known. You know what to expect there.
Yeah.
And then the last one would be now the sense of taste. All those, they fall under physiology.
Yeah.
Then you have the psychology.
Okay.
You understand? So we're talking about these disciplines that are involved there.
Yeah.
So then there we actually talk about how people's emotions and biases affect their reactions to food and drinks.
Yeah.
For example, why some people enjoy or why people enjoy foods, even though they can be harmful. There are people who enjoy extreme chilies that are very extreme. Hotness. And then the people enjoy the carbonated drinks. So that's a psychological science. And then we have the behavioral science.
Okay.
This one is just an application of the psychological principles to understand how consumers perceive and respond to food based on their senses.
Yeah.
So, and under these now, what we do here, we run the test that could actually evaluate the product as consumer acceptability.
Yes.
How is the product acceptable to the consumers?
Yes.
And also some of the products where we have to now, this is a product that is new, has never been to the market.
Mm.
So how do we profile it in terms of characteristics?
Mm.
So we need to know, describe that particular product. Those are the examples of the tests that are done under behavioral sciences.
Yeah.
Then we have the neuroscience.
Okay.
So under the neuroscience, this involves now the measuring, measuring brain responses to food and beverages.
Okay.
So this one, it uses a test called electroencephalogram.
Okay.
So it measures the electrical activity in the brain. Then the last one is the statistics. Now, after isn't that in these tests we use humans to collect data?
Yes.
So we have the data now here.
Yeah.
So for you to understand what is happening, you need to interpret, analyze, and interpret that data. Collected during evaluation of food. That is a statistic. So all those they fall under this sensory science.
Oh, it sounds like a fascinating science on its own, because I really didn't think in my mind it's that complex. Because when you are buying food, right, and now that you've made it very simple, right, and I know it's very technical, but now that you've explained it in this manner, I'm sure thinking, yeah man, that's why I buy this thing. Was that's why sometimes I buy that. I didn't even know that the hearing bit, because when you said hearing, I was like, hearing. How does hearing affect how I buy or decide to buy certain thoughts? And you saying that as I chew, there's a certain hearing or certain, I don't know, a beat or whatever.
That auditory sound.
Exactly,
that
exactly. So yeah, next time I...
And you enjoy that.
And I enjoy that, right? Yeah. So I'm saying, you've just made me realize why I buy certain things, Doc. And now I have a problem, because I'm going to look for that thing in my mind every time when I chew this thing. And I want to hear that sound and all those sort of stuff. So that's really quite interesting. So in the analysis bit then, you are actually taking all these sub-disciplines and you then come up with an answer to why people buy tomato, for example. Is that what it is?
Yes, all these that I've just mentioned there, you apply that to actually evaluate the product, you see whether the product now is ready for the market.
Yes, yes.
And then why people should buy this product.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Do people, Doc, it's almost like consciously evaluate food using all these, or we do it subconsciously?
You see, I like your question. This is where I was going.
Yeah.
So when you grew up, you used to watch your mom or grandma cooking.
Yes.
Whenever they were cooking, they did sensory science. They were not even aware that they were conducting sensory science.
Yes.
And they cook, they taste, they add ingredients. They know that whatever ingredient they add in that food they cook, it will affect the taste.
Yes.
Understand?
Yes.
So they constantly measured that by tasting.
Yeah.
So we do that subconsciously.
Ah.
You understand? Yeah. For instance, if you go, I think not long ago you were at the shop to buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah, just this morning.
Yes. Even before you bought that loaf of bread, it was not alone. There were other brands that were there with it.
Yes.
But because of that sense of sight, you chose that particular brand and the brand within that. And then from there, you started evaluating the product, the bread. You
know?
So you took the bread, you pressed it and released it. Why did you do that?
Okay.
What were you doing?
Okay.
What were you looking for?
I'm evaluating for something.
So the reason you're doing that subconsciously, you're assessing whether the bread is well cooked at the center.
Yeah.
At the center.
Yeah.
Because at the center there, if it's not cooked, the dough is still a dough there.
Yeah.
So if you press, when you press and release, it won't spring. It won't follow your head.
Yes, yes.
But if it's cooked, you press and release, it follows, it resumes its shape, original shape.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Not sensory evaluation.
Ah.
It's an example, you know, that we do as humans subconsciously.
Subconsciously. Subconsciously.
Yes.
Okay, that's really interesting, because I'm actually going back into, like I said, in this morning I went to go and buy certain things and all those sort of stuff. And yes, I did evaluate them with my eyes, looking at them like, no, this doesn't, and all those sort of stuff. So what I want to then get into, Doc, is are these almost built on biases? Or there's data. For example, the squeezing of the bread thing. I mean, I grew up, and I'm not so young anymore, but I grew up at a time where everyone was doing it. My mother used to do it. Grandmother used to do it. And is it biases that informed our generation, for example, that came after our grandmothers and all that used to? Because, like you said, they were probably doing evaluation and they were not really, you know, aware that this is a science, what they're doing. And so the next generation that follows, we all do the same thing. Just press and see if it really doesn't follow my hand, then it's probably much fresher. And all that. So my question is, do you think these are biases or there's data that informs this thing so that when our parents or whoever else we see doing it, we automatically think that's the way to do it?
No, I don't think it's biases. These are based on experience, which I can say, even though there's no, you know, people, they don't, let's talk about us as communities.
Yeah.
We don't, most of us, we don't just read. You don't have access to data.
Yes.
Because these data are kind of locked. They're in journals that need subscription in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's based on the experiences that people have, you understand?
Mm.
That they know that based on what they observed over the years from their parents, it's also, some of them, they're also part of this baking experience.
Okay.
You understand? They know that if the dough at the center of the what call of the bread is not cooked, the dough won't spring.
Yeah.
The bread won't spring back.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
It's based on experiences that it has nothing to do with bias.
Okay, I get it. At least that gives me some level of comfort. Let's then talk about new product development, because you did touch a little bit on that, right? What's the role of all these sensory science then in new product development? Is it we take the data and tells us what we need to produce for consumers as they look, as they touch, as they do all these things? We can say, labangat bafuna matematika kulu, land less of onions. I'm just making an example. But the role of this thing in new product development.
Okay, in new product development, you know, it is also quite big as well.
Yeah.
Within that product development, maybe you're developing a product because of you just want to change, have improve color or texture.
Yeah.
So maybe replacing a certain ingredient or just modifying the concentration of that particular ingredient.
Mm.
So now there you have to see how does that action affect the quality of the final product.
Yes.
So for you to know how that will affect, you need to do some sensory analysis using humans. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be consumed by humans. We also use the machines actually in correlations with humans. There are certain instruments that we use to do that.
Yeah.
And then that's why we also do some analysis just to correlate the results to see if you are in the right direction. But nothing beats the human machine when it comes to sensory evaluation of the food.
Yes, yes. Do you often use sometimes, or so maybe at certain instances, animals?
No, we don't use animals when it comes to sensory science. We use humans.
Okay.
Humans. Because even for kids, food that is made for kids, we use the takers or the caretakers of the kids.
Yeah.
You know, these nannies.
Yeah.
Because they understand more of their parents.
Yeah.
They understand more what kind of things the kids like.
Yeah.
So now the kids will like these, you understand?
Yeah.
So they are the ones who taste on behalf of the kids.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then do people ascribe these things equally? So for example, the touch, the smell, the, you know, all these things as I do them, or it depends. Some attach the look more than they do the psych, or they do. So is it equally distributed in terms of when then I decide 25% on how it looks, 25% on the smell, you know, another maybe 10% here as I touch it, or really there's no data that says people apportion these across when they make decisions?
I think let me put it this way.
Mm.
You let's say we blindfold you.
Okay.
We give you a tomato.
Yeah.
And ask you to touch the tomato and feel it.
Yeah.
And you already know how the tomato surface feels.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we give you that, you feel thorns on the tomato.
Yeah,
what would you do?
No.
Would you accept that tomato?
No. It's not a tomato.
No. You would throw that tomato before you even take out the blind, whatever the blind falls to you.
Exactly.
So then, this is not a tomato at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said. Yes. So, yeah, so when it comes to this, people know, it is generally known that this particular product, this is how it should feel like.
Yeah.
But there may be some variations in what is expected there, understand?
Yeah.
But there's a general kind of a feeling that is known.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah.
Tones in the tomato surface are not supposed to be there.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That's an example. Yes.
Yeah. So when I feel like it's not a tomato, then all the other senses are now picked. You know, things like smell, I would like, this thing I want to smell, because the way I touch it and the way it feels, I feel like a tomato, this one. So I'm already, my sense of smell is piqued, for example. My psyche of whether I want to buy this thing or not is now piqued as well. But I'm like, it doesn't feel like a tomato, especially if I'm blindfolded. So all the other senses, all the other sensory parts then become heightened. Is that the case?
Yes. For instance, like I was saying that, you know, even if it can give you desirable attributes, like if you say the smell, the taste, and all that, but the fact that there is one sensory attribute that is not popular with a tomato, that will affect the whole experience that you have with that tomato that you're evaluating.
Ah.
You understand? It will completely affect it.
Yes.
The acceptability of that. Yes.
Yeah. So I end up not buying it because it doesn't feel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't know what kind of an animal that you are buying at that point.
And it could be just an animal at that point, right? So
just an animal, you don't know. Never experienced that.
So I end up buying an animal unawares that I'm buying an animal. So that makes a whole lot of sense. Okay, the other one that I want to digress into, Doc, and maybe you can enlighten me here. When the different ingredients that are put together for making a certain product, and I'm going to move away from tomatoes before people who like tomatoes start saying, I've got a thing against tomatoes, so let me move away from tomatoes. So let's say maybe it's another product, a different product, right? Like baby something for babies, and my babies will forgive me. But let's say maybe it's a product for babies, right? How does this affect how much of the ingredients are put in there? For example, you find that the certain products that get recalled, right? And they say this product has too much salt or this whatever. Can't you buy bonanga from the time when they were doing this thing?
Yeah, you see, the ingredients are regulated.
Yeah.
There's a regulation of how much of each ingredient should be added to a food product. There's what's called a maximum limit.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
So, yes, of course, that happens, that sometimes you find that a certain ingredient has been actually added over within that product. Then the product has to be recalled because of that.
Yeah.
So those are kind of negligences that happened in the industry sometimes, unfortunately. You understand?
Yeah.
But this what you call field when it comes to food processing is a kind of very strict, very well regulated.
Yeah.
So the industries, they try by all means to avoid such, because they involve a lot of code.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting. And as we draw then to a close, I want to look at the future of sensory science, particularly in food technology. What are some of the things that you are talking about as colleagues, as researchers in this space? What are you seeing as trends, maybe 2025 and beyond? What are some of the things that are going to be at the forefront?
I don't want to lie, in 2025 I haven't checked anything yet, but what I can tell you that within when it comes to food, what you call science, sensory science, there are some trends, of course, that have started over the years. They're slowly actually progressing.
Yeah.
For instance, on the food packages.
Yes.
Yes, there are certain symbols and signs that are put there to indicate to communicate to the consumer what kind of, how does that particular product taste?
Mm.
For instance, the Heineken.
Yes.
Your Heineken has a star.
Yeah.
And that star that you see on the Heineken, it communicates to you that is a carbonated product.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
That's an example. Yes.
Yes.
We have such trends that actually are ongoing. And then there's still more that are emerging. And I'm expecting more as we have moved to this era of the artificial intelligence as well. Yes.
Okay, so artificial intelligence is also affecting the food technology space. What is the role then with these emerging trends that you're seeing? What is the role of me, a Thapelo, for example, when it comes to this space? Is there a responsibility of how I should look at things, how I should touch them and interact with my food products? Or are scientists doing the most that they can do to make sure that I'm safe? I don't necessarily have to check these and evaluate these things.
No, you see, whatever is put there on the label of the food is a communication from the manufacturer to the consumer.
Yeah.
It's just that, unfortunately, the consumers, they don't engage with that information.
Yes.
So a person goes there going for a Savannah, and there's a, this is Savannah. He takes the Savannah and goes without reading anything.
Yeah.
If this is a Coca-Cola, just look at the Coke. This is Coke.
Yes,
so why should I be reading Coke?
Yeah,
Coke
is
good. But you find that there's emerging information that actually has been put there for people to engage with that. As we, at some point, I came across a Coca-Cola that was infused with some, what you call, some, what you call compounds from hemp.
Yeah.
You know, even had that hemp leaf on the surface. You understand? But I still believe that people, they just looked at it. And then, because I don't see it anymore, maybe people, they looked at this and said, nah, this is insane. No. They never bought it. That's why it's no longer in the market.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
That's the problem that we have, that people do not engage with the communication that is on the package of our food. So they don't read. They just buy and go.
They
pick and pay.
Yes.
They are not so bright as. They pick and pay us.
No pun intended there, dog, right? They just pick and pay there. All right, let's end. We're out of time, dog. Any final thoughts on this sensory science? For me, what I'm taking is read and interact with what you are eating. Don't just pick and pay, as you said just now. But that for me is really an interesting take for me as I close. But your final thoughts, dog?
Yes, So, like I'll also say, encourage that people, they must be, you know, they must read when they buy the food. They must make sure that, because there are so many things that are happening, you know, some were not born with allergies, so you develop allergies as you grow.
Yes.
So don't just buy without checking whether this kind of product will have some certain ingredients that you are allergic to. And also whether it will actually, we have to buy a food for a purpose.
Yes.
So especially those who are health conscious, will it even provide you with what you are looking
yes,
for?
Really very important.
That if you are maybe you are in weight management or you are like looking for a certain, what called, kind of nutritional profile to improve your overall health like that. But it's based on the ingredients that have been added there and also the nutritional value.
Yeah.
That information put there is not decorating. The food is for the consumers to consume that information.
Oh, I love that. It's not decoration. It's information that you should consume as well. So that's
consume,
really great.
Not only consume the product, consume the information.
Consume the information, exactly.
Yes.
I love that. Yes. Thank you so much, Doc, for joining us this evening. You really just piqued my interest on this space, and I shall just engage with you a little bit on this on the sides. But thank you for your time, and God bless you, Doc.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a God blessings too.
Thank you so much, there. That was our good doctor there. That is Dr. Daniso Beswa talking to us about this really interesting topic of sensory science and food technology. Siyafunda.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.